Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that invites old people and flamingos. With me today is Phil Tucker, who you might know as the author of many fantasy books and also, you know, stuff like Bastion, you know, some like, you know, more niche stuff like the lit RPG and progression fantasy kind of stuff, maybe a little bit. Hi, Phil.
Man, you're trying to start a fight right out the gate, huh?
Yeah, I am really stressed out, and I'm going to let it out on you.
At least you're honest.
Next up is our resident flamingo, Neon Dreams. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good.
Okay, good. No back problems, because we just discussed this before the podcast started?
No.
Okay, no, good. Yeah. And then certified old person, Dad's Bedtime Story / Sean Wilson / what are the other
old folks
author Sean
yeah,
Wilson
author Sean Wilson yeah.
Old folks. Yeah, you might also I've had all of you on my podcast before, right?
Yeah.
So this is a nice group. This is nice. Okay, so if you're wondering what we're doing, we are having a roundtable discussion. It's going to be a bit more about writing than the original podcast, where we just like talk about all kind of stuff, but this time, we're actually going to be talking about more of the writing craft. That being said, we're still going to have some banter in between, I think. If people aren't just going to be like completely stone-faced at my attempts at German humor. But we'll see. We'll get it. All right, last month, we had a couple of people, and they brought up some questions. And my Patreons could vote on those questions, which ones they wanted to have answered the most. I think the biggest one that everyone kind of wanted answered was pitfalls to avoid when starting a story, right? It was about, well, how to begin a story. And if we're going to be talking about beginning a story, there's also some other topics that we will get into. So the questions of today are pitfalls to avoid when starting a story. How soon does a story actually start? Then a bit about intros, like what's the best intro you've ever read? Opening lines, how do you pick one? And what's the best opening line you've ever written? Then how do you introduce your main character, which is also a big up a question. And then how much does your start change from the first draft? So do you change your starts a lot? Cool. You are all very tired, it seems.
I was just going to say yes.
We're
to all
old, man.
Yeah. Okay,
good. This has been a Crit RPG podcast. We have answered all the questions of yes.
Yes.
Have people so far with starting a story? Yes. Very much so. Let's start with that one. All right. So because, Neon, you're the youngest, you can set us off.
All right. Well, pitfalls to avoid: do not start a story with action. Like, if you see, like, imagine, like, all those thriller prologues or, like, the horror movies. They start off with people walking around with flashlights, like some alien thing, and they find something and they get eaten, right? And like, yep. You as the watcher are like, these people are going to be eaten. Like, you don't care about these people. You don't know these people. And when they die, you don't mourn them. You don't go, aw, that sucks. Like, you are literally like, okay, bye, guy. If your main character is like that, people aren't going to read your story, all right? And that is exactly what happens when you throw people into action, throw people into the story. Like, you don't do that. You have to ground their daily life and narrative. You got to show what this person's life is like before the story, and you have to make people care about them. Otherwise, they don't care if they die. They don't care if they, you know, get divorced. They don't care if this happens or that. Like, the story is about getting people to care whether or not something happens. You raise the stakes. And if people don't care about a character, they're not going to do something. So when you're writing something, I think a lot of people, they get afraid, right? That if they don't start off the story as quickly as possible, and if they don't throw in a fight scene, people are going to stop reading it, you know? And so they throw this stuff in there. Well, people are going to stop reading it if they don't care about the character. And that can take 1 to 12 chapters before there's actually a fight scene And so, like, you just got to have some confidence. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a fight scene for that long, but I think that, like, if you have an actual fight scene, you need action throughout the story. But if you have an actual fight scene in the first three chapters, you're doing it wrong, I think, personally.
Okay. Is this lit RPG, like, or series fan, like, web serial specific advice? Because I have, like, one example that would contradict what you said that worked really well.
There's always examples of things that, you know, kind of conflict to this, but this is every type of story. This is every type of story, from horror to lit RPG, so on and so forth. Like, you need to introduce characters and put them through trials, and make people care about them. So this is, it's very, well, I mean, there's also something really important to note, is that if there's a prologue, that is a very different type of start in. So if you shouldn't write a prologue unless you have an actual reason to write a prologue. Like, the whole point of a prologue is to provide context that is actually required to understand the story. So that's the point of a prologue. But prologues are the only example where there's action and fight scenes, like, right as the movie starts. And those aren't with the main character, though. There are prologues with the main character, but, I mean, that's its own thing. But for the most part, when there's an action scene at the beginning of the movie, or, you know, fight scene, so on and so forth, those are prologues. They don't have to do with the main character for the most part. And then the story starts after the prologue with the character's daily life. So, you know, you could see some people at, like, this nuclear silo or, like, some CDC control place releasing a virus, right? And it's this really high, intense situation. And then it flips over to the main story, and the main dude is, like, cooking up toast, you know, and, like, chilling with his family. You know, you got this high-end, like, high, intense scene, and then it just goes to the guy living, and you're... That creates a lot of tension, and you're like, oh my god, like, this guy's about to get hamstringed. He's, like, sitting there eating toast, loving his life, you know, like, rolling around in his truck, gonna go to his kid's game, and you just know the zombie apocalypse is on the way, which creates a lot of cool tension. But you see, it's not the main character for the most part. So
that's true.
Yeah, while there might be a few examples of things that contradict that, I mean,
I think you're right. The example I was thinking of was Mistborn, but it's Kelsier who starts off the thing, and then we see, like, Vin in her, like, slumdog life. You're right.
Exactly. It's a prologue.
So, exactly. Phil, what was your thing that you wanted?
I was looking at a dungeon devotee. Because I thought that in the first chapter, Edmund actually does get into the first layer of the dungeon and dies. And I think that's actually really necessary for that story's success, because it basically is a promise to the reader as to what they're going to get. So I agree with pretty much everything Neon said, but I'd add a caveat, which is, I think the pitfall needs to be, you need to avoid is to give the wrong impression as to what the story is going to be. And so some readers show up for maximum crunch and violence. Like, that's what they want. And so, like, with a story like Dungeon Devotee, by having Edmund go straight into the dungeon and get killed by rats, the author is immediately saying, guys, you're in for, like, a really crunchy, really violent, non-stop action kind of story. And I don't think necessarily people care about Edmund, but what they care about is the fact that they're getting those dopamine buttons slammed right from the get-go. Like, rewards, violence, dungeons, it's all right there in the first chapter. So I think what...
Is it a time loop?
No, this is by Nixia on Railroad Dungeon Devotee. It's just, he goes level to level. I think Nixia releases a chapter a month. And it's gotten.
Didn't you say he died?
Yeah,
but the dungeon respawns him every time he dies.
He doesn't go kind of like back.
I'm glad you clarified. That was not the author who died. I was like, what?
No. It's oh my god, I don't think Phil is that callous. Like, yeah, he wrote a verse and he just died.
Bad luck for the author, but basically I think the pitfall you want to avoid when starting a story is to give the wrong promise, right?
Yeah.
So I think Neil's absolutely right that most of the time you want to invest people in your characters. But some readers, especially in Royal Road, they don't really care that much about deeper characters. What they're there for some stories, is crunch and fast-paced action and leveling up and rewards and violence. And the character is just a vehicle for all that. So I think you need to identify from the get-go what kind of audience you're trying to connect with and what they're coming to your story for. And then make sure you're giving that as quickly as possible to confirm that they're in the right place.
Well, I think this is one of the reasons that lit RPGs, so many of them start with like an orphan character, right?
Yeah.
Just like orphan character in the worst, most terrible place in the world. So like you like feel really bad and empathetic with this character for no reason, right? When you start reading, like, you know what I mean? Like it's the cheapest form of development ever.
We talked about this in your podcast, right, Neon? Like the kind of the how to make people care about your character. And yeah, you had some really good points. Your podcast is coming out, I think, in like a couple of weeks. But yeah, like it's a pretty good point. You have to make your people care about your character at the start of the story. And because Phil kind of stole my thing that I wanted to say. But the promise is what's important. You're going to give the start of the story is a promise. Made a huge mistake in the first version of Torchbearer, where I kind of promised some sort of like techno sci-fi mystical stuff. And then people were like, hey, wait, where's that in the next couple of chapters? And people who skipped that were like, wait, why is it suddenly sci-fi? So, yeah. But what about you, Sean?
So I'm still so new to all this that I'm learning the pitfalls the hard way, which is a joy. Again, I've only been writing since basically, you know, seriously, April of last year on Royal Road, end of April. With my dragon story, I did a prologue with, you know, setting up the scene for how the egg gets in the place. But then, like Neon said, you don't have any action for six chapters because you're building the relationship and everything else. You know, with my ultimate level one, I the first lines, which always makes me laugh, you know, was, you know, Max refused to piss himself while waiting in line. You know, and it's promising that the main character is this kind of, you know, weak, you know, oh, I got, you know, small bladder kind of guy, and, you know, building him from there. But I think Phil kind of really hit something I've noticed a lot, especially if you look at number one right now in Rising Stars, you know, and you look at that story, The Stubborn Skill Grinder, in a time loop, it's nonstop action. From book one, it's a time looper. Every chapter is action, 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 action. And it sets that crunchy number fix. And so, you know, you get 6,000, almost 7,000 followers because every chapter is based off of one thing. And it's the grinding to get better. And I think, you know, it depends on what you're writing. And that's kind of where I'm struggling still as a new writer, how to not hit those pitfalls.
Yeah. That being said, like you're being a new writer, you've wrote like 1.3 million words in your last year, like in the first year. So I don't think you really qualify as new anymore. You've written more than me my entire life in your first year. So let's go.
Did you write before that?
Of 2022, I had a friend that killed himself that year. And I needed to find a way to deal with it. And I always wanted to write. And so I sat down in August and I wrote three books of a fantasy series because I really wanted to write. And then I have about 50 plus rejection emails from agents. They're like, no, no, thank you. And then somebody in April, in fact, I didn't join Royal Road till April 27 of last year. They were like, hey, you should try maybe writing this kind of genre. And so I found Royal Road, wrote a goblin story that, you know, I learned a lot about Royal Road, and then joined Maddox and his crew on another Discord, and they really helped me start to hone my riding. And that's when June of last year, I started my Dragon Rider series, and that was kind of what put me on the map. So,
yeah. Your Goblin story was like already wasn't bad either, right? It had like 2.3K followers.
No. It's only got like maybe 900. I don't think it's got
2.3. 1.3 or something like that. It really wasn't that bad. So, way more than my first attempt. So, you hit something. But talking about like, right? Do we have any other real pitfalls that you shouldn't be doing when you started writing a story?
There's some classic ones, which are like, avoid the temptation just to do an overview of in the land of so-and-so when the gods created this place and 700 years ago, you know, like all the world building that you're so proud of, like that's a really classic one to avoid. You want to get right into the story itself. And I think you also want to, I think that's the big one, especially in fantasy and especially in genres where, you know, like lit RPG, when you get really proud of your system or really proud of all the stuff you've done, all your homework. You don't want to like front load that too much. You want to get into whatever your story is as quickly as possible. So I think that's one of the big classic pitfalls that sometimes people fall into.
Yeah. You got to make sure that you have that your story starts where it actually starts, right? Because sometimes we like to have these scenes and that don't really add all that much,
right?
And kind of just, you know, meander along. And in web serials, that's fine, by the way. People expect that.
Have you heard that classic piece of advice, which is like whenever you finish something, like just delete the first chapter?
No, I haven't, but...
Yeah, okay. I've actually seen that too.
Yeah, it's like your first chapter is probably you waffling around and it's kind of like building up to what your story is. So if you delete your first chapter, now you're in the thick of it, which is, it's obviously like, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, I think a lot of writers are often like, they're like, I want to save the good stuff. I want to build up to it. I want to really like, you know, but... You got to, I think, knowing where your story actually, I think it's one of the next sticky notes, isn't it? Where does your story actually start? That's a huge one because I think that's one of the main reasons a lot of readers don't get pulled into a story is because they're like, I don't really see where this is going. I don't see what the point of this is.
Why is she in a Waffle House? Yeah. Neon, you want to say something?
Yeah. I think that another thing with starting a story is you got to pick what type of characterization you're going to do. Because if you're on Royal Road, people like, you know, like people say they hate Mary Sue characters, but they love them. They love them. They're the number one thing on there. And the reason why is that people like to self-insert themselves into a story and feel like they're in it, right? And so when you're creating these characters, you create characters that are hyper-rational. And kind of like emotionally muted. That way, like people never feel bad about their decisions, right? And so that's a type of character. Now you don't have to use that type of character, but like if you're going to create a character with emotions and a personality in the first chapter, well, I mean it isn't harsh. It's commercial, right? There's commercial writing and there's nothing wrong with creating these characters, you know, but if you are going to create a compelling character with a really good personality and character flaws, you need to throw those all out there in chapter one. So
people know what they're getting into. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, it's just say an extreme example, your character has OCD. You want to put that character in the first scene, like that opening line, into a dirty room. Yeah. And then you did watch this person in all of their glory just wig out. And it's compelling, right? Like you're showing this person's character flaws and reasons to like them at the beginning. Mm. But you're also setting expectations for the rest of the story that this person is going to be this flawed character who has OCD and is going to create this flavor. You know what I mean? You don't want to show that later. You don't want people to get used to that character and then show this intense thing. You want to show that at the beginning. But if you were not going to create an ultra flawed character who is whatever, you shouldn't do that at all, I guess is what I'm saying. So that would be the pitfall.
The we're going to talk about this, like introducing a character in a minute. I think like this is the maybe a bit of a flaw in the roundtable format that we have, because like these all kind of overlap into each other. But lots of these things are going to be about characters, because books are about characters. And yes, like having a flat character arc, having a character that maybe doesn't really care all that much, or is, you know, like in for a fun ride, is also completely viable, right? People want to read it, so these books sell, and that's okay. There's nothing bad about
it. But I think also, you know, something we all haven't talked about, but we all kind of think about is, what am I going to do with the story? You know, how many of us have ever sat down and be like, oh, I'm going to write this great story, and you write a chapter, and you're like, now I don't know where to go with this. Or this isn't going to go anywhere now. Like, oh, you know, that's not good. And so I had to learn how to plot some, because you sign a 3-book deal and you finish book one, you're like, what am I going to do now? So you're like, I got to figure this out. So I think part of that too is, you know, actually knowing what you're wanting to write. Even though I like to pants, I still feel there's an overall, where am I going to go?
Phil, was it you who recommended Take Off Your Pants to me, the book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you grab it?
Yeah, I got it. I really like it. Thanks for the recommendation. I really, really liked it. I used it to plot Torchbearer Beta.
Fantastic.
Because, it's really, really good. And one thing that I think we should mention here is this idea of like the coherent theme. I've always thought about this, but I've never really put it into words like this. It's if you know what your story is about, you also know what your first chapter is not going to be or is going to be, right? So if you have a story that is about reining in your emotions to overcome your inner demons, something like that, right? Like Torchbearer, for example. Then you need to start in a scene like what Neon explained. You need to have the main character struggle with her inner demons in the first scene and struggle with her emotions in the first scene, because this is what the story is about. And yes, you can add in some filler because we are writing web serials mostly. But at the same time, if your first chapter doesn't accurately represent what your story is going to be about, not just the character, but in the theme, people are going to be very confused. Imagine Harry Potter starts. Yeah, Harry Potter starts with. I'm going to edit this out. Harry Potter starts with magic. It starts off by Albus Dumbledore having a magic lighter, and he pulls in all the street lights into his lighter, and then the guy comes in with a flying motorcycle, right? So okay, this story is about magic. That makes sense. And then we get into Harry Potter and the boy who lived and being under the stairs and all that kind of stuff. So you also know this story is about underdogs who can stand up for themselves and get bullied a lot, growing into something magical, maybe, right? Mm-hmm.
Are we still on pitfalls? Because I'm holding back from saying anything beyond
trying. We can go to the next one because I think we're already way over half. Which one do you want, Phil?
I will take...
An E for 50-50.
Yeah, I'll take how do you introduce your main character for 400, Bob.
Okay. All right.
Bonus points for that.
Okay, so I would say that how you introduce your main character is dependent on the style of story you're writing. When it comes to Railroad and late RPG, I think you've got two basic approaches. One is the super supportive magical girl gunslinger style, where it's extremely focused on character, and so you introduce your main character with a lot of voice and characterization, but primarily by making them vulnerable and showing emotion so that the reader can connect really quickly with this character. And this can be done by them riding a bus or anything, as long as you're able to really bring out that voice and to really display what's unique and interesting and intriguing about this character. And then you contrast that with their situation, or you put them in trouble. But first and foremost, you got to hook them with your emotions. The other option is the crunchy system first kind of story. Mm-hmm. And that's when you want to be sure that you've got your character sheet and your system displayed in your first chapter, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have your system apocalypse happen right away. They're looking out the window having tea. The world explodes, so they get hit with their system notification. And then you put the entire stat sheet in there so that the reader can be like, oh, what does, tennis shoe flex level 7 mean? Like, what's going on with it? Like, that's where you put your hooks, right? Because the reader's going to be interested in the system, in the crunch, in what you're promising as an author is going to be sort of, much more of it, not so character focused, but, you know, almost like thrillers, how they have a hook, which is like something intriguing and different that pulls the reader in. So with the first one, you got to focus on vulnerability and deep character work. And so you introduce them usually from first person point of view or very close third. And they're doing something like in Super Supportive, it's atrocious that start, right? With the cataclysmic explosion and the pain and the crying. And you immediately have tons of sympathy. I think Magical Girl Gunslinger, she's almost getting bullied straight away. Same with Worm. And you're getting that really deep emotional hook as quickly as you possibly can. But then you have other stories like Dungeon Devotee or any of these big classic system apocalypse stories. And right there, you introduce the main character as a generic sort of fill-in kind of character where anyone can project onto them. So they work a dead-end cubicle job. They're a burned out late 20s something whose potential was squandered. The system apocalypse happens. They get a character sheet. So the way you introduce your main character there is as smoothly and without as any complications as you can, right? They're almost like a faceless cipher, usually in their work setting. And then you drop in the system and the character sheet and all the crunch that's going to make all the crunch loving readers sit up and start salivating. I would say very roughly, those are the two main approaches in the genre that you can take. If you can pull both of them off at the same time, I don't even know if that's a good thing because you may be confusing the readers. Is this this or is this that? Like, you kind of want to pick what your main focus is and then just like really ride that home. But I'd say
that is what I was going to say. Do not mix and match these. Do not mix and match these, because if you create a crunch character and then later make them do an emotional decision, people will flock out of your novel. It will be an exodus. People will freak out and leave.
Right.
And you only get one or the other. Take your pick. Yeah. You know, like, do they have emotions or they don't, you know? So,
but I think it's possible to have an emotionally vulnerable, sophisticated character and then bring in some really interesting crunch, because I think half the comments, if not most of the comments for Super Supportive is like, what does carry your luggage even mean? Right.
Yeah.
So everyone's endlessly speculating about the system, but you're absolutely right. You don't want to have a self insert, then turn into an Alden.
Like, yeah.
You want to have it separate and then stick to your lane.
Yeah, a square is a rectangle, not the other way around. Yeah, like dramatic characters can make rational decisions, and people will love that.
Right.
But you don't want these crunch characters that are designed for self-insert to ever rock the boat. Like, the characters are not the point of a self-insert story. You know, if you read something like Defiance of the Fall, you just want to watch numbers go up. You know, like, you want that satisfaction of someone running around, accomplishing things, and constantly moving up. The character is irrelevant.
It's a cookie clicker. It's a cookie clicker of literature, which is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
Some even say it's lucrative.
Yeah. Okay. I never really want to go there. I never really want to say like people just write these for like, oh, the monies, but
I'm not saying he writes it for the money. I'm saying there's a ton of people who love it. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
that's
the
point.
It's commercial.
If you like writing these stories, then all the power to you. I mean, I wish
you
would.
You have to love writing it, because otherwise you'd go insane by book 6. So, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have that passion for crunch, it's not going to last.
So being new to all this, the only reason why I still get to write is because I'm now making enough money that my wife says I can write. So there is a financial side to this, but I, you know, Max knows me. There's nothing I love more than getting up in the morning, shipping all my kids off to school, and then sitting down on my computer and then grinding until I have to leave to go pick them up. And I'm like, if you could lock me in a room with just no noise and my laptop for 8 hours a day, I'd be in heaven because that's what I love. But
Sean's secret is he doesn't need the plot because he literally dreams his plots. It is insane.
That sounds very convenient.
It is convenient.
It is until it's 3 a.m. Your brain's like, you need to get up and write this down. And you're like, no, I don't want to.
That happened to me last night. I watched the first 5 minutes of Fallout, and I was so like caught up with like the emotion of just that intro.
A great one.
That I was like, I stopped it, and I went back and wrote another chapter. I was just like, so.
Oh God, this happens so much.
But so, you know, but here's the problem. So you guys are talking about like experienced authors who have figured these secrets out, and we can, you know, look back at book one. And again, I'm still quote unquote new and learning, and I'm reading books and trying to get better, but I'm like, oh man, I just wrote this book. How did I introduce my character? Did I make a promise like this? Am I building an emotional guy? Like, you know, how am I doing this? I'm like, crap, do I need to go back and look at this? And,
yeah, but you got your instincts, right, that have come from a lifetime of reading and absorbing stories and books. So, like, once you've been doing this for a while, you're like, wait, I need to continue being able to do this. So you start reflecting on it. But in the beginning, you're just shooting from the hip with all the instincts that you've been absorbing for years of being a fan of this kind of stuff. So you probably you're intuitively doing all this stuff. And in a way, it almost kind of like ruins it to analyze it too much. Because then you start getting a little too calculated and it starts to feel a little stiff. So you really need to enjoy that sort of like, I just love writing. I love creating. I can't wait to get to it. Because you're just channeling that raw creativity onto the page. And sometimes that ends up being the best stuff you ever write over the whole career. Because readers respond to that rawness.
And also like, if you're at the point where everything kind of gets stiff because you're like overanalyzing everything and you're like apply everything that you've learned. That's also okay because that will also pass at some point. at some point you will have internalized all these rules and you will be able to find out what's going wrong by having all these rules, but then also being able to just like write for funsies again. Neon, sorry. You were just going to say.
Oh, no, I always just laugh because they talk about Stephen King being a pantser. He's not a pantser. He's not a pantser. Like, this dude has, like, 25 years of storytelling experience. He just does naturally what you're supposed to do in his head. You know what I mean? Like, he's not pantsing. He's, like, going off the rails sometimes. But he knows what he's doing, you know? And most of us don't.
Wait.
Difference.
Pantsing just means that you don't outline before you write.
Yeah, but you know, people treat it as okay. So people treat it as you sit down and you write, but that's not how pantsing works. Pantsing comes in like garden variety. I was talking to Delicious Meats the other night about how he's a gardener, and he's talking about how he always creates scenarios and then branches out. So he's creating this web as you go, or you do what's known as conceptual outlining, where like when I start a story, I'm a quote unquote pantser, but I create a conceptual outline. I know where a story is going to end. I know the major plot points in between it. And then I create a conceptual outline where it's like on the first chapter, you have to introduce a character and make people care about them and showcase their character traits through situations. And if you're on Royal Road, you're going to want to start the story at the end of chapter one, at midway through chapter two at the earliest. Then in the second chapter, you want to introduce the world. And then on the third chapter, you want to put someone into a state of conflict with their magical system. Chapter four. See, like, there's things that you need to get done And then as a pantser, you just have to create scenarios in order to fulfill them. But you're not just doing it randomly. Like, there's a conceptual, like, backbone of, like, things that you have to get done and you do them. So you get what I'm saying?
Totally. I just worry that, like, someone will listen to this and be like, oh, okay, it's chapter one, check mark, chapter two, check mark. Like, this is not how it works.
As he said that, though, okay. I was doing that. I was like, okay, that new story I just did. Yeah, I did that in chapter one. Yeah, chapter two was that. Yeah, three, four. I was like, what's chapter five supposed to be? You know, like, please, keep going.
Okay, but here's the thing. Those first four chapters are always going to be the same. I can write 150 different novels with different types, and those first four chapters are going to be the same. So that is something that you do have to check off. How you can do it is infinitely creative.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you get out of chapter four, like, obviously, like, you're not going to be writing algorithmically, as people say, but, like, those first four chapters of story structure are the same, and it works the same for lit RPGs and Harry Potter. I could like break down these stories, Lord of the Rings. Like, you could just give me random stories and I can show.
Actually, like, I'm referencing the same number of books. Like, I think the entire time I've read a lot of books about writing and so on and so forth. And there are some very prescriptive ones, like the fantasy fiction formula, for example, the one that Jim Butcher kind of recommended because it's written by his mentor. I found that too formulaic. I really like Secrets of Story by Matt Bird, because he just has like a checklist, and he even says, like, please do not check off all these boxes, but some of them. And he said that I need to actually take this because I don't want to misquote the guy. One second. Okay, so here we go. Questions to ask about character. So once you've cleared away all these misconceptions, how do you create a compelling character? How do you draw the audience in against their better judgment? How do you overcome the jaded cynicism? You have to somehow make them believe, care, and invest into the character. And you can read more of that in The Secrets of Story by Matt Bird.
Yeah.
It's a really good book. Basically, what he says is that people have to be believable, which means that they're how they act has to make sense, right? We've all had this happen with one or two stories that we love in a RPG, where it's like suddenly the main character does something for completely weird reasons just because the plot demands it. Then the next one is invest. So we need to invest into the character, so there has to be something at stake, right? The character has to be... Yeah, you have to want to follow the guy or the girl, I guess. And care. So care is, we have to care about the guy. We have to see him vulnerable, have to see her vulnerable. And then invest is, if we're going to stay with this character, is it going to pay off at the end? Right? So they have to be capable in some way, shape, or form. And this, at the very start of the story, you need to show this, I think, the very first chapter, to have the character believable, vulnerable, and capable.
But I think that's just traditional writing advice.
That is, like, yeah, that's
traditional fantasy. And it works. Very true if that's what you want to do. But I think with Lit RPG, Royal Road, Progression Fantasy, I think what you first and foremost need to decide is, what's your vibe? Like, what are you trying to put down? What are you interested in? And what do you want your readers to be interested in? It may have nothing to do with character. It may have nothing to do with good writing. I mean, I've seen some really successful works on Royal Road that I'm like, how is this moving so many copies? Like, this isn't, the character's flat. It's basically a cardboard cutout. The writing is not a very, but what it's doing is...
Just don't say the title of my book, please, when you say that.
I was working up to it. But you basically...
I have the answer. I have the answer to that question, Phil. It has me as the main character.
No. But what you do is like, no. But what you see is that tens of thousands of readers are responding to this because of the vibe, the promise it's making, right? So I feel like, there are very efficient ways to convey a whole bunch of things. Chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, chapter four. You can like bust out all the necessary stuff to be like professional about it. But then you get these like stories and you're like, how does this have 8,000 followers with like 100 comments on each chapter when it's not doing anything like quote unquote right? And I think it's because these are being written primarily by authors who were until very recently like fanatical readers. Yeah. And they know in their bones what the tropes are. They know in their bones what is working in the genre. They know what they personally enjoy. And it may have nothing to do with like technically good writing or believable characters. It has to do with delivering that specific dopamine promise, that hit, right? And so I think the first step is just before you even start thinking about what I need to be doing or should I pants or outline, you just need to really zero in on what you're going to be channeling onto the page. And there's no right or wrong. It's just passion, right?
Yeah.
If you can put passion on the page, which is why I was saying with Sean, like these first books that you're writing when it's raw creativity and you're just completely hyped about what you're doing and the passion is at 100%, that can be infinitely more successful than a really technically sound but kind of sterile story that hits all the notes but doesn't do it with that, you know, that incredible that verve, that vibe that you're putting down.
Can you please not call out my story like this? First Sean, now me, like really Phil. Like what's up here?
Guys, I'm just here to speak the truth.
I'm joking, of course. My book's not bad. I'm just putting myself down again. My therapist and I talked about this. All right, no. So you're completely right, though. However, I do like Matt's advice, like Matt Bird's advice, because it's still true for Little RPG. Super flat. Even if it's super flat, it still makes sense.
I think about like Defiance of the Fall is like the ultimate example of a highly successful book that is 80% action and explanatory exposition. It has 10% world building. There goes like 120 pages where there's six lines at the beginning of Defiance of the Fall. All right, like this is a book that just grinds. This dude's sitting outside in an axe with an axe, and he just kills things for like 1,000 pages and keeps getting stronger. And like I read the book when I was cleaning, and I'd zone out for like 20 minutes. And I'd come back into it and nothing was different. You know, like this is a book that is very mind numbing. Numbers go up and it has that value to it. Mm-hmm. But even in this book, it still starts out the same way. You introduce a character in his daily life, even though he's just chopping wood. That is all he's doing. He's chopping wood and he's talking about his relationships with person A, B, C, and D. Yeah. It's in the flashback. You're not actually showing it, but you're like telling people through this flashback of some stuff. You kind of make people care about him because he has these relationship problems and whatnot. And then you jar him into the multiverse where everything switches. And this all happens in like, I don't know, 1,000 words, 1,500 words or something like that. But the actual multiverse doesn't come in until chapter 3. And then the rest of the book is nothing but crunch, hardcore crunch forever for the rest of the series. And so, like, I guess what I'm saying is that, like, that's just kind of how stories work. You know what I mean? Like, even if you're going to create a bland character, like, we don't even know what this guy looks like. We don't know his favorite birthday. He has zero emotions. Like, you know, and it has that crunch vibe.
But still, like, as you said at the start, the character is believable, right? Like, he has friends. He exists in a world. He has, like, some sort of relationship. We care about him for some reason. Like, you mentioned the orphan factor, right? Like, oh, man, character's an orphan. Like, we care about him. It's I hesitate to call it cheap because it works. Right, it is just, what do you want to do? Okay, we want to have a shortcut here so you can have more time to talk more about action, right? This is fine. And then you have capable, of course. And this is something that every single Lit RPG author that is successful does well. Your main character has to be some sort of badass in some sort of way, which is all our entire genre is about, right? I mean, even like Reborn as a Demonic Tree. He's a tree, but man, he has like roots that can like eat people and kill them, right? In like the first chapter, and he makes do with these tools, even though he's like rooted in place quite literally. So I do still this not all classic advice is applicable to the RPG, like quite true. I think even I think it was Libby who was like, all characters in every book that ever sold has like a really good emotional arc, and Host and Racha and Haylock, we were sitting there going like, no, they don't. Right? Because like there's, I don't know, like the character arcs in some of our lit RPGs are like zero wind. But it's like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I love this genre. I wouldn't be doing this podcast if it wasn't. But it's never going to win a Pulitzer Prize.
Right. It's not trying.
But it's going to earn all the money. Well, so it's fine.
We're not in it to win a Pulitzer Prize. We're in it to
speak for yourself.
Make money. Well, make money and get to write and do what I love, you know, but you know, I mean, at least for me.
Yeah. It's okay. I'll be over here in my pauper corner with like no money and my Pulitzer.
Yeah, it's a fascinating genre where things that break a lot of classical advice are still A, incredibly lucrative, and B, really hard to duplicate.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
You don't have a ton of people writing these incredibly lucrative Patreon crunchy flat characters. It still takes an inordinate amount of skill and talent to be able to write 10 books that not only hold people's attention but causes more and more people to sign up. Like that is, you know, incredibly hard to do.
Yeah.
Let's skip over to the next question. How soon does the story actually start? I think it's going to be a bit of a shorter one, but
I'm going to say on Royal Road specifically at the end of chapter one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. End of chapter one. Okay.
Yeah, like clockwork.
You have to have something at the end of chapter one to get him to chapter two.
Yeah. Well, it's a new ad. If you're interested in having your story shouted out on this podcast, please reach out to me under critrpg.podcast@gmail.com. But in the meantime, why not check out the old version of my book, Torchbearer? You can find it on Royal Road, and there's a link down below. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening and or watching, and I hope you're enjoying the show. That's true. It, like the every good pilot in a TV show, you were talking about Fallout, Phil. You have to have a hook, right? Mm-hmm. But that being hook. Said, my story starts on the first line. My story starts on the cover. All right, because I think that it's just kind of fun, and I like doing things way too complicated and like doing weird little tricks because it's what's fun to me. But this is also why I'm not earning, you know, tens of thousands of euros each day. But I personally think that the story should start with the first word, and it shouldn't
define story.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, yeah,
I'll pick on Phil because he picked on me earlier. When you look on Bastion's cover, because you kind of mentioned the story starts at the cover. I mean, when you look at that cover, you're like, oh, hell yeah. I mean, that's like, ha-ha, you know, we're going to get somewhere. This is going to be a big, you know, is this the bad guys? It's the MC. And you're immediately drawn in. You know what I'm saying? And then you yep. start hitting the story actually going, okay, what am I going to see? What is this going to be about? Which I know goes kind of funny, but I talk with Silky a lot for Mango Media because he's publishing my stuff. And he's like, no, we only want one or two things on the cover because you want to start the story from the cover. If you put 18 people on the cover, they don't know who the main character is. It's hard to describe what's going on in the story most of the time. And so you throw that one or two thing, bam, there you go. And so now they've looked at the cover, and I tell people this all the time when they're like, hey, can you give me a shout out? And I'm like, yeah, but you're really going to need a better cover because nobody's going to click that. And I'm speaking again, basically on Royal Road, you know, and because that's the gate for most people that they're going to go through to try and get to Amazon or Patreon and make money. And so if your cover doesn't sell part of your story, then you're out of luck. You know, why do harem covers 99% of the time feature women that are really well endowed and wearing very little clothing? Because they're selling a story about, hey, here's the girl that's in the story, and don't you wish you were the MC, self-insert, you know, bam, here we go. You know,
or in this case, like also external insert, yeah, like
whatever. Sure. You know, it, you know, demonic tree. I see a big, nasty, ugly tree. You know, that's what I know. You know, merchant crab. You know, I got a little hook here with, you know, you're selling the story immediately in gold our coins. Genre of what we're going for. And then I think, you know, kind of like Neon said, you've got to have that hook at the end of chapter one. And Phil was right talking about the whole Fallout. I'm watching this. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm pumped up, man. I'm like, this is everyone is so great. And, you know, I'm like, oh, now I got to click next chapter right now. I got to next episode because it's that good. I mean, so I think there's got to be definitely that cover start and that chapter one and, you know, kind of from there.
Which is also, again, something that's completely opposite to trad. If you're looking at trad covers right now, the fantasy trad genre is very much like very artsy. Like, I love the cover, for example, of She Who Became the Sun. My God, that's beautiful. But it's like very minimalist. It's just a couple of lines, and in like two colors, very bold. I love that. But if you had that on Royal Road, no one would click it. Ironically, and this is a history lesson of the day, this is very, very much like the pulp fiction of the 1930s, 1940s, 50s, which quite ironically sometimes maybe. This was like the beginning of like, you know, the gay movement, and these pulp fiction books actually were the reason why words like stranger and strange and gay became had like these like quote unquote negative connotations, because there were lots of stories about like the strange man or the stranger in the bar, right? Like just on a cover, and on the cover, this is the point where I'm getting to, you could see what kind of novel it was by who made eye contact. Right. If you had a cover and like two men were making eye contact, you know what was going to be happening in that story, even though it was kind of banned. But there was no like federal commission to like read pulp fiction novels. They just like sold them for like a dime. Right. And they printed them like crazy and just sold them. So, yeah, there you go. Lit RPG is very, very gay. I'm going to get canceled for this, aren't I? Oh, God. I'm sorry. No. Yeah. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Covers. Yeah. And something. It's going to be okay. Okay. So, best intro you've ever read, opening lines, how do you pick a first sentence of your story, and what's the best opening line you've ever written? So, basically, I think we can make this really, really short. So, best intro you've ever read.
The one that comes to mind is the prologue for, you know, that cathedral building series, World Without End?
No.
It's these huge books. I'm forgetting the guy's name. But anyway, it's like multi-generational, like building a cathedral in medieval England. And one of them begins with a prologue that was just 3 pages long, really sharp, really macabre. And it set the tone for the entire book. It was actually far better than the book itself. but what it did was it really it whetted my appetite because of the promises it made. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly intense, very intriguing. I'll pull up the name just so that if anyone wants to go read it on Amazon, probably it's in the free sample. Sorry, I know I'm typing, Maddox.
That's fine.
It's the prequel to A World Without End. I think it was when the Kingsbridge. Yeah, I think it was World Without End. Anyway, go read that 3-page prologue. It's just brilliantly done. As to how you pick the first sentence of your story, it's super important. I think for me, it's just much more intuitive. I don't agonize. I know some people come back when the novel's finished and then rewrite the beginning to try and really capture the book that they've just completed. But for me, I think I just try and drop into an exciting moment. Mm-hmm. And I want that first sentence to be very clear and simple and evocative and surprising in some way. So not a big run-on sentence, nothing that's contingent on, you know, the reader really paying a lot of attention, and very character-focused. Mm-hmm. If you can sort of hit the ground running in that sense, I think it works. the best opening line I've ever written. I don't know. The last chapter that I just wrote in my work in progress began with "A massacre could be a beautiful thing."
Nice.
So like something like that, that has a little surprise to it that makes the reader kind of say, wait, what the fuck? And pay a little bit more attention. That's the vibe I think you kind of want to shoot for. So you got to snap them out of their preconceived expectations, and they're already probably dismissing it even as they're opening the chapter. So you got to do something to like wake them up and make them really look at.
I can go next. I think the best intro I've ever read, and I think I'm going to steal this from someone, I guess, but the Waystone Inn lay in silence, and it was a silence of three parts. Man, that's good. Like it's the beginning of Name of the Wind, and just like the first page of Name of the Wind is just, you can
quite
see that.
The Name of the Wind
like,
is just awesome.
Yeah,
I love that story so much.
He spent like, I think he must have spent months on this first page alone, because it's like it's been chiseled to perfection.
He spent like 11 years writing the first novel.
Yeah. I mean, so, and now he's spending 15 like, writing the third, so that's nice. And I legit, like I talked about this with another friend, I think, with Lars, I think. It's okay. Like, you give the guy time. Like, yeah. I like first lines that immediately evoke a sense of danger for progression fantasy RPG, right? I think if you're looking at, I don't know, all the skills, for example, I think the very first line is about Arthur running, right? Or is it? And like Sean mentioned earlier, one of his, I think it's ultimate level one, where it's about, you know, the guy like having a weak bladder. And like that's also like some sort of danger, right? Because the danger of public humiliation. And the best opening line I've ever written, it's probably "We left the window open unashamed."
Nice.
Thank you. We'll see. Who wants to go next?
You know, I'm going to be bad and I'm going to go real classic and old school because I'm old. But I've always remembered this, you know, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
That is a real,
you know, that when I think about best I've ever read, I mean, I remember reading that from junior high, you know, kind of thing. It's like, Now I realize how good it is. Kind of like Phil with his, that he just mentioned a minute ago, like, man, that'll grab your attention kind of there, especially in that thing. The best opening line that I've ever written, man, I kind of like what I did with my dragon story, just because, you know, it's either, you know, today I escape or tomorrow I die. You know, it's basically those are my two options.
Mm. Nice.
Neo, you're up. You're up.
Man. Sure. Neon, let's go.
Best intro I ever read is Under the Dome by Stephen King. There's this really short but excellent like opening about these people flying a plane, and it's this really sunny opening and they're talking about how great the weather is and how bright the future is. And it ends with, they had 40 seconds to live. And it's like literally like one page. All right. So it's like not this big drawn out thing. It's just this beautiful like thing. And then it just shows them hitting the dome, flying. And it's this ultimate show, not tell adventure where there's a dome that gets brought over this small town and like everyone's crashing into it. And it's like cuts a golfer in half. And it's just, it's just really cool. But I remember that they had 40 seconds to live, and that's just hard. Yeah, it just hit hard in the paint. I loved it.
Stephen King is the master of good intros. Like, he's really, really good. Because he kind of manages to tell you what the story is going to be about in the first line of the story. The man in black fled through the desert and the gunslinger followed. That's the story. That is the entire story of this book. And it's a really good intro, like a really good first line. But yeah, so you go ahead. Next one. Neon.
Opening lines. I think it's opening scene. Like mm-hmm. I said, I'm a character-focused writer. So mm-hmm. I write these fantastically destructive characters that are like train wrecks to watch, and they're just compelling, right? And so mm-hmm. I like to, like, you want to put them into a situation in their daily life that has conflict in it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what it is, but that conflict should be interesting. And I can't click around to find one of these, but I think that's just really important to go through, find a conflicting situation that showcases their characterization, whatever it might be. And like I said, if you have an OCD person, you put them into a dirty room, then you throw in character voice. That first sentence is going to be character voice on that person's viewpoints on a dirty room. You know what I mean? Something that's really compelling. But I think that's different for everyone, because not everyone writes those character focused books, especially in the RPG. So
I mean, like, opening lines are very hard, but the OCD one, like, you can have lots of fun with it, right? And I think talking about how to write prose is a whole different ballpark, whole different round. But yeah, also sometimes prose really gets in the way, especially in lit RPG. But yeah, what's the best opening line, Neon?
You know, I don't know. There's I can think of like a lot of opening paragraphs that are really interesting, but I can't think of normal lines without actually looking them up. Okay. You know, so
how about this? You look them up while Sean's talking.
Okay.
What would you like me to talk about? Because, you know, I'm able to talk about anything.
I mean, like, we talked about your stuff, didn't we? And I just put my foot in my mouth.
So let me ask a question for Phil, because, you know, he's someone I've always respected since wow, stumbling harsh. Upon him in April of last year. So it's been a whole year. It's actually funny.
Whole year.
It's funny because when you come into the genre that we're in and we're doing what we're doing, we typically get recommended three or four individuals for, hey, what should I read first? You know, and it's Phil or it's Matt or, you know, it's these three things, you know, read about Lyndon and all these other. And so when you think of yourself, maybe you don't think of yourself, but when you think of yourself as being in that category, and I listened to your podcast you had this week that came out, which was really good, and I took away some great points from that, you know, you're what, again, you've been writing for 15 plus years, realistically, you said, you're at a point now where you're known. Do you find it harder to be known and to put quality work out? And I'm not calling your work not quality, obviously, but do you find it harder on yourself, or do you feel like there's pressure from behind, or do you just really don't care?
I mean, first off, that's, I really appreciate you saying that. But as for working after so long, I've actually found that each new series, if not each new book, is a completely new challenge. So it's almost like I think Neil Gaiman said that you don't learn to write books, you just learn to write the book that you just finished. So I don't feel like accomplished. If anything, I still feel like I'm just getting started in a lot of weird ways, because, you know, when you're trying to support a family and writing full time, the pressure is always on, and readers tend to be loyal to a series and not to the author. So you can write a series that does pretty well, and then once it finishes, if your next series doesn't hit, like, you start dropping fast, because they're like, nah, you know, I really like that other thing, I'm not that crazy about the new thing. So there's never a sense of having like arrived or achieved. There's like, okay, that one did pretty good, then the one after that kind of bombed. Like, I just released Gods of the Game earlier this year, and it
oh yeah
hasn't
you mean
sold.
Creek Chest,
thank you very much. It hasn't sold much at all. And it's like, okay, I got to hustle and get something else cooking, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't consider myself at all, and I'm not being like fake modern, I don't consider myself on the level of like the big names in the genre. I think those guys are really like next level in terms of success. And but I am definitely trying to maintain what I've accomplished. I was just going to wrap it up and say, yeah, I feel like maybe if I had a series that had been running for 10 years, I would feel more stable or set. But because I like to go through shorter series like trilogies, or Bastion's going a little longer, but like Dawn of the Void, I've wrapped up. Gods of the Game, I'm going to wrap up. I feel like I'm constantly hungry and trying something new. Like I'm writing a Royal Road web novel now that I'm really hoping will do better than the previous one. So I feel like a rank amateur trying to like figure out how the Royal Road ecosystem works. The rules are so distinct. It's very much its own animal. So I think, yeah, I don't feel like I've got any laurels to rest on. I feel like I'm constantly out there trying to make the next thing work, if that makes sense.
Totally. Also, if you're not in the big leagues, then I don't freaking know who is.
I can name some names. Will White is in the big leagues. Matt Dinneman, First to Fire. You know,
that's not the big leagues. That's like S tier.
Okay.
I mean, like let's be realistic. Like there's like you can count people like on 10 fingers. Like you got Shortland, First to Fire, Zogarth, Matt Dinneman, and Will.
Nobody.
Okay, actually, I don't think nobody makes that much cash on Patreon.
Casual Farmer
is in there too.
Beware of Chicken.
Yeah,
that is Casual Farmer.
Sorry,
that's Casual Farmer. Super supportive. Fine. I think Slaka is killing it. Pirate Abba.
Oh my god, Phil, Pirate Abba, yeah. But you missed the perfect opportunity for a slaying pun. Like
I don't go for puns. It's such a low hanging fruit. I never want to like embarrass myself in public that way.
You hear that?
Dude, you just called out your whole stitch, man.
I'm so sad my screen's like, frozen.
Do you guys hear that? Like that like cracking noise followed by like this rushing sound of liquid. That was my heart.
No. Oh, that was your heart. It's like, yeah, I don't want to be like Maddox.
I couldn't resist, sorry. I've heard enough of your shows. I've heard enough of these interviews that I'm like, yeah, I know what makes Maddox tick.
Like, it's fine. I know you're just being facetious because you are a Patreon of my show.
Oh, pulling out the big guns. All right, fine. Shut down the entire conversation. Go for it.
It's fine. It's fine. Like obviously you like it. And just like kind of one of those like,
what if
like,
I'm
you
a know, masochist? Like,
closet pun enjoyers, I would have said, but I mean if you want to go that way, you can know that too. I mean like we were talking about harem earlier. We can do this again if you want to. No, okay, first. That's not. Because it's a nice podcast. People are like nice to each other.
We're very nice to each other.
Yes. Do you feel?
I'm sorry. I take back my pun comment. Officially,
puns are the. I accept your apology.
Yep.
Now let's go on. Next topic. Go on.
Let's see. What's the next post-it?
The last post-it. Actually, we're already over scheduled because I don't want to make these like 1.5 hour long because these take a lot of time to edit. So, how much?
Be honest. You know.
No, for every person on the podcast times the amount of hours, you can calculate that. That's the amount of time I spend editing these podcasts. So if we're four people, then we have four hours of me editing. And if it's 4.5 hours, then it's even more. So,
Okay. Three word answers, everybody.
No, I'm getting bullied again on my own podcast.
Start from first draft 3.
Okay, so how much does your start change from the first draft? Well, certainly for mine it has changed a lot. Because I rewrote 3 times. Completely, yeah. 100%. Mm-hmm. Neon, how about you?
I think that if you haven't rewritten your first chapter 5 times, you're doing it wrong.
Okay.
Because, like, your first chapter is going to be where people not only get hooked, but also where they set expectations on how good or bad you are as an author. So if you make them angry at the beginning, they're going to judge your novel no matter how good it gets later on. So that's really important. But the other thing is if you think on Royal Road, you're thinking of retention rate, right? Mm-hmm. And if you can double your retention rate on chapter one, you are literally doubling the amount of people that are going to read your story for the rest of time. So if you're not obsessing over chapter one and playing with it and getting feedback on it, like you're doing it wrong. And I remember this one story, this notorious story, where I rewrote the first four chapters 8 times. Like the story started it in 8 different places, 8 times. Mm-hmm. And I wrote the entire book and it's pretty solid and I haven't released it. And I'm not going to. So, you know, it's a lot of work, but you're investing in yourself, you know. I would say the first 3 chapters, you got to write them like 4 times a piece. Personally.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes though you kind of hit and then you kind of rewrite at the end again. I think that's like the best way of doing it. Because sometimes, especially if you're more into the pantsing side, you kind of want to take the momentum that you have at the start and just kind of run with it. So don't rewrite at the start. Like, don't do 8 rewrites of your first chapter as the start. Don't do that.
Yeah, you have to write like a third of the book first and then rewrite the first chapter. You just have to rewrite the chapter right before you release.
Yeah. Not like right before then, but I got it. Sean, how much did your drafts change?
Dragon, I think I did 17 times the first chapter. Probably about 15, maybe a little bit less on Ultimate Level 1.
Yeah.
You really want to get those right. Yeah, I remember that. That was cool. That was fun. Man, I remember like at least like 5 iterations of that, of the Dragon Rider story.
I actually have the first one that I ever wrote still, and I go back and I look at it, and I'm like, oh.
It's like inspiration.
I mean, like think about this, right? Just because you've grown so much over just 1 year, that like, right? If your stuff, if thinking about old stuff doesn't make you cringe, you haven't grown.
I was asking Phil a question because, you know, I wrote that Viking book already, and it's getting developmental edited, and then I'm gonna line edit it.
Wait, this is already done?
I wrote it.
You didn't you start it like last
I wrote
month?
It in 17 days. So.
This has been the Quit RPG Podcast, everyone. Thank you so much for listening and watching.
Yeah, I just give up.
I wrote 130,000 words in 17 days, you know. But so I'm getting a line at line
edit. Let me also one second. Sorry, Sean. Like I need to clarify this. Like, it's not as though you have a full-time job. You only have 6 kids and a half-time job. So
oh my god.
I'm out. I'm just
It's okay.
Sorry, you were saying,
you know, because,
Sean?
I'm doing a developmental edit, and then I'm going to do a line edit, and then I'll finally take it to Royal Road because I do want to try and, you know, be better at what I do. But I already started reworking on the first chapter again, and I'm like, crap. I mean, like, I'm really trying to get that first chapter right. And, you know, I'm probably 7 iterations into it already. You know, you want to have it perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did we already ask you, Phil?
No.
Okay, good. Then thanks for everyone for coming to the Quit RPG Podcast. Go on, Phil.
It depends on the project. Some of them I've done some rewrites. Some of them they come out pretty clean. So, like Bastion, I definitely did a bunch. I couldn't find the right place to start, so I ended up doing like 3 or 4 attempts in like completely different places and locales until it locked in. But with others, like the one I'm working on right now, that first chapter just came out right, and I don't think I'm going to touch it from the first time I wrote it. Late last year, I think I wrote like 200,000 words in a project I ended up abandoning. Mm. I literally restarted it like 12 times, and it just wouldn't take. So it's very much project dependent. But sometimes they come out clean and it works and it doesn't seem to need anything. And so I'm able just to continue running.
Yeah. One, I have a book that it's an urban fantasy set in Berlin. It's never going to be on Royal Road properly. But I wrote the entire book and it was a trad book. So like, I think it was like 80, 90,000 words, something like that. I wrote that like 5 times. It had like a completely different story, completely different point of view, completely different everything. Every single time, and it's still not done. And that book broke me, and I didn't write for like the longest time. So do yourself a favor and don't do that to yourself. I know it's your baby, but go and write something else for a while and come back to your love story later on. Makes much more sense. Just go on Royal Road, make a pen account with like a stupid name, and then just put out something that you don't care about, just as a palate cleanser. It's a trash story. We love trash stories. But I'm not calling like Royal Road stories trash. I'm saying like
It's out there now.
Write the worst story that you can.
I mean, that's not the best marketing you can do when you're trying to connect with your audience. But you know, everyone's got a different approach.
It's the negative approach.
Okay,
you're negging the entire Royal Road crowd.
Phil, I love you.
I just really admire your bravery.
You did this to yourself, Phil. You can, of course, also like write a really, really good story and just call it Creek Chess.
Oh, look at the time.
Okay. So this has been the Crit RPG Podcast Roundtable for this time. Dissing Maddox edition. I really hope that I will see all of you who are listening and are watching again, and everyone who's in this room. Have a good day. I love you all. Thanks so much for coming in. This has been a blast. And I really hope that you will consider coming by again and chatting. It's been super forced to chill. Shit out your books, guys. Let's go.
Go ahead, Neon, you're youngest.
Oh, I'm writing a book called Riftwalker in the future. It's going to be an apocalypse novel, takes place in the United States, and it's absolutely lit. So that's going to come out later in like 2 months. So check it out.
Ooh, nice. All right. Sean,
you're the oldest. I was the oldest. Ultimate Level 1, obviously, is my numbers going up story. It's doing really good. Book 2 hits on the 23rd of this month, basically a book every 2 months. And then Dawn of the Last Dragon Rider is my dragon series, which is just kind of fun. Great relationships. So
it has crabs.
It does have crabs. It does have a crab.
Yes. There's maybe even a merchant.
It might be a merchant crab.
Might be. Yeah. Almost. Yeah. Phil.
Why do you say that with such reluctance?
I don't know. I'm afraid of you now. Like you bought us on yourself. I'm a skittish animal, like a fragile, beautiful being, and you broke me.
No, I'm sure you'll.
You killed the last unicorn, Phil. Go on.
You just equated yourself to the last unicorn.
Have you looked at me?
No, I just think that's beautiful.
Look at these eyelashes.
So April 29th, I'm going to be publishing a new web novel on Royal Road called Thrones of the Fallen. It's going to be a weak to strong, if not strongest, dungeon delving, kind of slightly crazy fantasy setting, which I'm pretty excited to share with everybody. So Thrones of the Fallen.
Is it crunchy?
It's going to be moderately crunchy. Not nearly as crunchy as some of the stuff out there. So, but it's definitely got sheets and skills and abilities and classes and stuff. So, I'm hoping people dig it. But one way to find out, I guess.
So more like Lucky Charms, less of Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Kind of maybe just more in line of like Dawn of the Void, the one I wrote last time, where there's character sheets and abilities and stats, but I don't repeat the sheet every chapter, and I don't spend a lot of time with formulas figuring out to hit bonuses and stuff. So,
but then how are you going to drive?
A little bit lighter. What?
But then how are you going to drive your narrator insane?
By sending like edits halfway through the narration.
Oh, that's a good point. That's very.
You learn that's the best way to do it.
Shout out to all narrators out of the show. I'm learning from the best here. Okay. Well, so. My book, I don't have a book right now because I'm working full time and I'm not like Sean. I can't, you know, do this stuff. So, that being said, I finished editing Torchbearer Alpha. So that's definitely out there. Thank you. It's not released yet, but it's going to be released whenever I have the time to like build a backlog of like at least 20 chapters for Torchbearer Beta, which is the second book. And it's already plotted, and it's going to be really looking forward to writing the stories. It's really, really fun. And after that, I'm done with that. There's going to be the band story, which you can look forward to, which is like way more railroad adequate. Anyway, but you can listen to this podcast. I'm doing a podcast episode every single week, and this has been very, very tech-heavy, very writing-heavy. Usually we talk about all sorts of bullshit. With Phil, we talked about anime, for example. Neon, we also like talked about... Man, we talked like for 3 hours or something, right? That was fun.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. And Sean was actually my 9th guest. So he's OG. Man. Yeah, a long time ago. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening and or watching. There's no more Patreon content, but we're going to be writing new questions for the next show right after this is done. And then you can go on Patreon and vote on these for the next show. So for the next round of people, this is it. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching, and I'll see you next time.
Am I supposed to say bye?
No one's
bye.
Waving.
I waved.
Bye-bye. Bye. We all wave.
Yeah,
bye.
Yeah. I did too, but we're all frozen.
Yes, awesome. Phil didn't. Phil just like... Phil's not waving guy.
Fuck it.
This is the perfect end to this podcast. Bye, guys.